Welcome to the Whole Self Podcast, where we talk about various mental health topics with an emphasis on the body, mind, and spirit connection. Our goal is to empower our listeners with the knowledge and tools needed to embark on their own healing journey. A gentle reminder that this podcast is not a substitute for therapy, and we encourage you to seek out your own therapy if needed.
Hi, welcome to the Whole Self Podcast. I'm Sharon Wegman.
I'm Kayla Cedar.
And today we're going to be talking about how gender roles impact sexual desire in married women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this is a follow-up to our other series that we were doing, understanding mental load, understanding weaponized incompetence, understanding boundaries in marriage. And if you hadn't had a chance to listen to those, we really would encourage you to take a listen because it will make this next part make a whole lot more sense. But just as a recap, mental load is looking at what are the behind-the-scenes stuff that women are doing to run the household. And we do look at this. Generally speaking, it is the woman carrying the mental load. So what are the things that are being done that the woman is taking the brunt of the responsibility for? Child rearing, household management, things along those lines. And then also the weaponized incompetence. So how, based off of gender roles, is maybe one gender doing things intentionally wrong or claiming ignorance in order to get out of household management and parenting responsibilities? So when we're talking about gender roles and how they impact sexual desire in married women, we really just want to offer a disclaimer to take care of yourself well while listening to this.
Yeah, it's a heavy topic.
It really is. And even just to, you know, normalize some feelings that might come up, heavy, sad, anger. Even while writing this, we certainly had some of our own emotions coming up. So we may even take some breaks to take care of ourselves well during this. So we certainly want to encourage our listeners to take care of themselves well while listening to this.
Yeah, and the goal really is to kind of say to yourself, what are you willing to pass on to your children? Because whatever you don't deal with will be passed on to your children.
Yeah.
And that's heavy, but that should be the most amazing challenge that parents have before them, because they really can break the generational patterns.
Yeah.
And we see it happen all the time. Mm-hmm. And it's a powerful thing. Okay, so today we're going to be talking about traditional gender roles and women's low sexual desire in relationships. Not only is this something that we've seen come up in our office a lot, but Kayla found a really amazing study that not only analyzed the trend of low sexual desire of married women and how gender roles are impacting that, but also talked about and analyzed what low sexual desire of married women looks like and attributed to the roles that they play in the home. So again, we encourage you to go back to those previous podcasts that kind of lay the foundation for this, which is probably the most intimate of those four that we're going to be talking about, of the four podcasts, this being the fourth.
So this is certainly something that we hear both men and women saying, right, of this concern around sexual dissatisfaction in marriage, feeling incompatible sexually with your partner, women feeling concerned of, I have a very low sex drive, like I'm not interested in having sex with my husband, or a husband saying, like, why doesn't my wife want to, like, engage sexually with me? And really just naming and understanding that gender roles can cause harm to everyone.
Yes.
So we're really just looking at how are some beliefs that I have around gender roles unintentionally causing a continuation of harm, both to me and in my relationships.
Yeah, and I think I see this a lot with men who are not naming what they need and expecting the woman to somehow telepathically know what they need, you know, emotionally. And then it often, because of the way society has created the gender roles for men, push it into the sexual relationship.
Yeah, I think all of us, it might be safe to say that it was a universal experience sitting through some type of church service where we heard women have only emotional needs and men only have sexual needs.
Yes.
So we're here to kind of just explore that a little bit deeper. So is that really true? And how do we understand that we are holistic beings that have, men have more complexities to them besides just wanting and needing sex, and women have more complexities to them than just, I don't know, we're more than just a sack of emotions, right?
Yeah, and I think what we see for a lot of men is they were not allowed to verbalize what they needed emotionally or whatever. And so to that end, often it shifts into more avoidance or more anxiousness tied to their sexuality. And once they can begin to be able to verbalize their needs, they don't have to push it into avoidance or sexuality.
Yeah, absolutely. So how can I gauge other parts of me so that I have more permission to say what I need emotionally, so that I'm not getting, I have more permission to express needs outside of just my sexual needs.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But men have not been socialized to be able to name those needs.
Yes, which is exactly why we look at how sometimes gender roles cause harm to every single one.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So Kayla, let's talk about that amazing study that you found. Can you introduce that?
Yeah, sure. So just a really easy title here.
That's why I'm having Kayla say it.
So this is, the study was called Heteronormity Theory of Low Sexual Desire in Women Partnered with Men. If you are interested in reading more of this study, we will have it linked in the description notes. So please feel free to read up. just a light, easy, breezy read. But we're going to kind of recap it for you guys in case you don't want to read it.
Right. So according to the study, approximately 30% of women are reporting low desire, with estimates ranging anywhere from 10.2% to 55%. And for men, the numbers range from 1 to 28%. So in both cases, that women are having much more severe or higher rates of low sex desire.
So desire, you know, just to quote the study, so desire is often situated as low because of its relative status to a partner's level of desire. Interestingly, however, this is not a gender neutral process, and the bound is often set with the man partner as a reference point. So looking at, okay, if we're looking at men as the barometer almost to say this, it's women are reporting a low sex drive in comparison to what they perceive or are being told their husbands want. So it's almost this naming of a low sex drive.
Yeah, and I think a lot of women have a hard time labeling that. I think men would have a harder time saying that they would have a low sex drive. That's very emasculating for them to say. And yet there are many men out there who have low desire, and that's completely normal, even though it's not talked about.
And even in the cases where a man is reporting lower sex drive than a woman partner, then the woman's desire is labeled as too high. Rather than the man's desire being labeled too low.
Exactly. So again, using women to kind of help unemasculate the man as a means of protecting their, unfortunately, masculinity, which was a tongue twister that I just said there. But again, we're using those statistics that men sometimes say, well, she has too much of a sex drive, as a way to not feel the feeling of having low sex drive, is somehow that's emasculating, which it's not.
No.
It's normal.
It is. So low sex drive is typically seen as a problem residing in people, usually women's bodies, in part because sexual desire is seen as natural and human, universal. This assumption is prominent with both academic and public discourse, but is low desire really a problem? So again, when we're looking at the gender roles that play into this, especially if we're reflecting back on what we see a lot in here, is purity culture, right?
Yes.
So people who were born and raised in a purity culture mindset that labels women as these sexual temptresses who need to cover their bodies at all times in lest we create an environment where our brother will stumble, and then men who are these uncontrollable sex maniacs who have no control over their sexual desires whatsoever, right?
Yeah, and that's a lot. And I was thinking, like, because if women are taught this in the purity culture from the time they're very young, their worldview is based on controlling their body at all times, covering their body at all times, not having sexual desire, not causing other people to sin. So if we're experiencing those messages in our first 12 years, then we're entering into our adulthood already with a desire to push down sexuality.
Mm. How we treat sex education then too kind of becomes a problem, because then it's, okay, now I'm married and I'm supposed to be just sexually available to the husband at all times then, right? Because again, we're oftentimes in the purity culture, we're also looking at how men need sex 100% of the time or some ridiculously high amount of time. So women go from this expectation of covering and not being sexual to them being sexually available to their husbands at all times. And also looking at, so what does that say for the individual woman then? What does it mean to be a good wife? What does it mean to be a good Christian wife? What does it mean to be a good woman? So when we're relating and connecting moral meaning of ourselves to how we're relating in a marriage, it can really cause some very serious harm.
Yeah, and I was just thinking about, I just feel sad for women's bodies. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel sad for the fact that as I was hearing you talk, I was like, wow, I have to give up and betray whatever I need in that moment in the care of the other person. Which is what we do as moms, mm-hmm. which comes into one of our factors that we're going to be talking in a little bit.
Yeah.
But the idea that as a woman, in order for me to be a good wife, I have to betray my body to please the other person it grieves me.
It grieves me as well, and it feels really heavy, because the other part of that too is this like reciprocal thing of, oh, well, men will be more likely to meet your emotional needs if you're meeting them in their sexual needs. So this barter system of, if I give you sex, then will I get what I need? And even if we're reflecting back on some of those earlier topics that we were just talking about, like, I hate to say it, but the truth about it is that if the man is avoidant and is not able to understand his emotional needs, there's no amount of sex that you can give this man that he will be able to meet your needs and show up the way you need him to in the marriage. And that feels really heavy. I can feel that in my body. Yeah, I feel that.
It's heavy. And I think society has taught us that that's the case, but there's no actual evidence tied to that statistically. We don't see that in our offices. Mm-mm. That doesn't change the avoidance.
No, it doesn't.
And that's the sad part.
It is. And you know, and that's kind of where we come is we see this all too often of what can I do differently to have my husband engage me well.
Right.
What type of woman do I need to be to have my husband show up the way that I need him to, because I continue to put myself in positions to show up in ways that he needs me to, and yet I get nothing in return.
That's so upsetting, and it kind of makes me feel like, and I often will confront people in my office, I will say something like, do you feel like you have superpowers that you can change the other person's engagement with you by doing this? Or that's not actually a thing. Mm-hmm. It's not something that can happen. You have no control over what the other person is going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, in the Christian community, that has been taught.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not based on science in any way, shape, or form.
No, it's not. It's based around this idea of women can control the narrative when they offer sex. And that is really unfortunate for everybody involved.
Yes. So.
So just kind of going back to really recap the, like, it's really important that we probably name that. What we're talking about is a feminist theory. And at the end of the day, we're advocating for women wanting to do what they want to do because they feel empowered to choose it.
Mm.
So if you, please don't hear this. Like, if you're happy with your marriage and this feels, what is going well for you is going well for you.
Yeah.
We honor that. But if there was an inclination that there was something more going on here and you didn't have the words to name it, then we want to give you the words to name it and the knowledge to understand that if it felt wrong and off, chances are it probably was.
Yeah, and we're not shaming men in any way, shape, or form, because as we talked before, we believe that this theory has actually impacted men as well. It's not just women that it's impacting.
No. And I feel the same level of empathy and compassion for men who do have these parts of them that want so desperately to engage emotionally, and then all of the boxes that society builds around a man's emotions that says, you can't go there. What type of man will you be if you go there?
Mm. Yeah, no, it's very emasculating. It's very tricky for them. So the challenge is, and people say to me all the time, well, what do I do? And I'm like, there is no simple math, kind of like what you just said. Okay, do this and this will equal this, because everybody has their own attachment, their own stories, their own whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So there is no simple solution for every single person. Do this and then this will happen. That's not a thing. But the church has taught that.
Yeah.
And yet we see that as we are all unique beings created in a different way, and we need to actually sit with people and figure out what works for them.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about how in that idea of traditional gender roles influence low desire in women partnered with men, let's talk about the factors in that.
Yeah.
One is the inequitable division of labor. The more stress a person is under, the more cortisol is released into the body. That's a big statement. Sit with that for a minute. The more stress the person is under, the more cortisol is released into the body, equaling lower sex desire. And that mental load equals cortisol dumping. And the more there's cortisol, there's less desire. And we live a very fast-paced world, don't we? I think of how I live now as opposed to 20 years ago, because we now have mobile phones and we have all the things on the internet. We're constantly doing tasks, whether we understand it or not. Mm-hmm. And that really is dumping a lot of cortisol into the body.
Even if we're not actively engaged in the execution of a task, we are planning and considering what it will take to execute that task.
Yes, it's we are constantly moving our brain. And so add that to the mental load. We got a lot of cortisol flow all the time in our body.
Yeah. So the other part of this is looking at how a woman's brain literally changes when she becomes a mother. So this is hormonal. This is biological. So the caregiving mother role will change the structure of the brain, will change the type of hormones that are being released. Because what is happening is the brain is registering a child as a child, someone to be taken care of. So when we're looking at marriages where sometimes the man will posture himself in a way to be taken care of by neglecting mental load, by engaging in weaponized incompetence, by not showing up as an equal partner, the woman's brain is literally registering him as a child. And I don't need to say it, but I will. We don't want to have sex with a child. That is not the way that the brain works.
Yes.
So this is a huge, huge, huge piece that if a husband engages similarly as to the wife as the child relates to the wife, the woman's brain is not going to create the hormones necessary to want to engage sexually with him.
That's just powerful science that everyone needs to grab a hold of.
Yes.
It's powerful science.
It would literally be going against biology.
Ooh, and think of what that does to the brain. When we understand trauma and women choosing to do that, even though their brain is not in that space, that's really harmful to the body.
It is harmful to the body because even if we're just looking at, again, the biology that goes into different sex organs and what they need in order to engage well is if you are going against what your body and your brain is telling you, that is causing not only trauma to the brain and the emotions, but you could potentially be causing trauma to your body and your organs as well.
Yeah, and we see people who have forced themselves to have sex, you know, their body has more and more of a PTSD response to this, the forcing of having sex over a long period of time. Changes their pelvic floor, changes so many aspects of their body responses to sex. People freezing up, people having panic responses because they're forcing their bodies to do something that their brain is not able to go to.
Yeah. We're just having so much compassion right now to those parts that show up for women that say, I have to do this in order to be a good wife.
Yeah.
And still engage sexually like that.
Another part is objectification, which porn has destroyed sexuality for so many people. If we know the statistics of sexuality, 50% of men have porn addiction. It's a large number. And it really causes sexual interaction to sometimes be what I call pornified. And the end result is that can be very traumatic to the woman because there's more objectification, more focus on performing as opposed to connecting sexually. So we see that to be a very large problem.
Yes.
In a woman's desire. Because if they're being treated like they have to act out porn, they don't want any part of it.
Yeah. Because even then, yes. So what does the woman need to do in order to perform to meet the narrative that the husband has in his head about what sex is supposed to look like? If the image of sex is pornified, then it's this, how do I need to show up? How do I need to show up in sex so that my husband isn't, like, feeling bad or that I'm not interested?
Yeah, it's
more betrayal.
It's a huge, huge problem. And then what we see for men, okay, let's put it on the male side. Yeah. They are unable to perform with normal, natural images, you know, because they've experienced such touched up images in porn, unreal images, that their sexual desire is now tied to that which is not even actually normal. Mm-hmm. And they have a hard time engaging with regular sexual connection.
Yes, even the pressure that it puts on him potentially to compare his performance to something that is doctored or literally for show.
It's not even possible. No. Most of it's not even possible.
No.
Right. So let's talk about general lack of sexual and education and anatomy and education around desire. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have a lot of people who, even as adults, I'm doing sex ed for them, particularly from more Christian communities, because a lot of the narrative has been, don't talk about it. Mm-hmm. It's an unsafe topic. And then people enter into marriages and women have inability to achieve orgasm, and then they feel frustrated and the man feels frustrated because they can't get the woman to orgasm. And I have to do a lot of sex education with people who have been married for a long time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that also impacts sexual desire. If I haven't been educated, I'm not going to be able to figure out how to help my wife achieve orgasm. As a woman, I'm not going to be able to know what I need. So that can also impact sexual desire, because maybe it's an unfulfilling experience for both partners.
Mm-hmm. I think purity culture gives a very limited scope of what sexual interaction is, and understanding that there is a whole spectrum here and what a woman's anatomy might need compared to what a man's anatomy might need to feel fully present and engaged and desiring of the interaction. I just don't know how good of a job we're doing in educating and being able to advocate for.
Right. It feels like it's too little over on one side, mm-hmm. and it's too pornified on the other side.
Yeah.
All right. So if you are crying at home, we're sorry right now. But what we're trying to do is point to things that you can move towards. We've talked about a wide variety of things. So let's talk about our takeaways here. Mm-hmm. For me, it's really powerful to recognize what is going on sexually in the marriage.
Yes.
What are the patterns? What are the cycles? What are we not saying? What are we not doing? This is a huge part of just naming the elements of this recipe of sexuality and connection. Let's talk about, what do you do if we find it triggering?
Yeah. So again, listening to a podcast is not a substitution for a therapy session.
Yeah.
So if you have a therapist and this was triggering for you, we do encourage you to process this with your therapist or somebody in your support system. Again, we are inviting you to take care of yourself well. Know what you need to do. Take a break. Go for a walk. Put it down. Don't listen to the whole episode all at once. Take care of yourself well.
Yeah. And again, I want to go back to that idea. Everybody's different. Mm-hmm. Everyone on the face of the earth is different. And sometimes that going to therapy is going to be very helpful to your marriage, mm-hmm. to be able to figure out what's the math for us. What's mm-hmm. going on for us? Because it might be too vulnerable for you to talk about it, just you and your partner. Mm-hmm. You're likely to get very triggered because everybody has to feel defensive or feel heard. And so sometimes going to therapy really helps have that partner that helps you speak about really hard topics.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So again, we do have the study in the show notes. other resources that we find helpful that we'll link to, The Great Sex Rescue by Sheila
Grigor.
Okay. I wasn't sure if the E was pronounced or not. Jimmy on Relationships on Instagram and Facebook. And, of course, our previous episodes about the mental load and weaponized incompetence for more information on those topics. And then also the boundary conversations with your partner from some suggestions on how to approach conversations around the mental load with your partner.
And I think a couple years ago, Kate and I did a podcast on healthy married sexuality. Hmm. What does that look like? And mm-hmm. we talked a lot about how there's a lot of intimacy issues that need to be addressed. Mm-hmm. So that could be another portion. But this is a little more detailed than what we just talked about
yeah.
with Kate. So go back and listen to that one as well.
Mm-hmm.
There will be two parts to this episode because we want to talk about how men and their traditional gender roles can be harmful to them in their relationship to sex. And we felt like that's a whole other topic. It's mm-hmm. not that a different topic, but it's more specialized. So we're really thinking about figuring out how we can bring a man to talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's really important for men to feel heard in this topic.
Mm-hmm. Again, when we're looking at how sometimes gender roles can cause harm to everyone. Nobody's immune to these things.
All right, so if you found today's episode helpful, give us a 5-star review and be sure to subscribe to our podcast. You can also follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Whole Self Therapists.
Thanks for joining us.
Have a great day, guys.
Thank you so much for listening. Any resources or links from today's episode can be found in our show notes. Original music in this episode is by Christopher Burkholder. Thank you so much for listening. Any resources or links from today's episode can be found in our show notes. Original music in this episode is by Christopher Burkholder.